ranked one of America's top research universities, the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee plays a vital role in shaping the future of Milwaukee and Wisconsin. UWM's diversity, academic excellence, and world-class research contribute to the region's economic development and quality of life. Meet the people behind the creativity and discoveries on UWM today. Here's the host, Tom Lujack, Vice Chancellor of University Relations.
For years, we've been hearing about efforts to get more women to enter the STEM fields, science, technology, engineering, and math. And while there are some encouraging signs that more females are becoming engineers, those gains have been offset by a steady exodus of women from the profession. On this edition of UWM Today, we're going to find out why. Two UWM researchers have interviewed thousands of engineers around the country, both women and men, and what they learned may surprise you. We welcome Nadia Fouad, who's the UWM Distinguished Professor and the Mary and Ted Kellner Endowed Chair of Educational Psychology at UWM's School of Education, and Ramila Singh, Associate Professor of Organizations and Strategic Management at the Lubar School of Business at UWM. Welcome, ladies. Good to have both of you
Thank you. Because
a few years ago, we brought you on just as you were really getting underway with this major national study of women and the engineering profession. And Nadia, a lot has happened since the last time you were here.
Yeah, I think, thank you, first of all, for inviting us back to talk about this. I think one of the impetuses for us to come back is that we were able to collect more data from men. So maybe it would be helpful to give a little bit of a context for this entire big study. We started asking questions really prompted by one of my doctoral students who had been an engineer and came back to get a doctorate in counseling psychology. And she said, you know, we're doing all this work to try to get women to go into engineering, but you know, half leave, which is a pretty amazing statistic. And that statistic has been pretty steady for a good 2 to 3 decades. That although they have billions of dollars that have gone into trying to promote women to go into engineering, STEM in general, but also engineering, even though those numbers have increased in college, there are still a number leaving the field.
And that's so amazing, isn't it, given the investment
exactly.
of money and time
exactly.
to get that degree? It's not an easy degree to get.
No, for me anyway, it would be a very rigorous curriculum. We say actually that it's a tremendous loss to the nation because you've got all these very talented, very dedicated women who are trained to be in this field, and then they either don't enter or they don't stay in the field.
And that's a big concern, and that's one of the reasons why the National Science Foundation has funded your research.
Exactly.
Really remarkable.
Exactly.
National study.
So 10 years ago?
10 years ago.
Yeah, 10 years mm-hmm. ago, we started, we went to universities that had, mm-hmm. We had a list from the Association of
American Society for Engineering Education.
Engineering education, the top universities that graduated women in their colleges, and asked them if they would partner with us. And we had 30 to 31 who said yes. And then we were able to survey their alums because we had to contact alumni and we had about 5,000 women responded. And it has really taken over our career. We then followed up about 5 years later with trying to go back to the same universities and survey their male engineers. And that's one of the things we want to talk about today.
Yeah, and so before we talk about the men, let's talk about the women and what you found and discovered in this survey of what it is that would give someone a reason to essentially sacrifice this huge investment. Ramila, what were some of the reasons behind women's decision to leave the profession that presumably they loved at one point?
Well, when Nadia's student mentioned that about 40% or 50% of women leave engineering, we decided to check the literature to see what the figure was like. And we found that there was hardly any research on women in the engineering workforce. So all the billions of dollars of money that were being invested in preparing girls and women to enter the engineering workforce, none of that was being researched what happens after they get into the workforce. And this is where the National Science Foundation funded our research to take a look at why women engineers leave. And we found some very interesting factors. We looked at personal factors, individual factors in terms of their levels of self-confidence, because that was the narrative that women are leaving because they are not really confident about engineering or handling the tasks at work. We also looked at the organizational factors, the climate factors in terms of the support they were getting from the managers, how much training they're getting, how much promotion opportunities are they getting that are fair and transparent, and also the other kind of climate issues in terms of are they being belittled at work, are they being undermined at work, so then kind of the darker side of the organizational life. And what we found is that it was not the confidence. We compared women who left the field with women who were still working in engineering, but who were kind of at the cusp of leaving engineering. They did say that we are going to see how long we can continue. So they were committed, but they were also looking around for opportunities. And climate played a big role. So it was not the self-confidence. They had a lot of confidence in the work that they did, in specifically in engineering, technical engineering work. It was the climate that really popped out in terms of both the supportive climate for those who are continuing on in the field, and for those who left, it was really the microclimate that we like to call in terms of just experiencing a lot of undermining from the supervisors and co-workers, incivility, just condescending behavior at work, lack of advancement opportunities, low salary, the different treatment. Those are the things that kind of led them to leave engineering.
And did all of the negative behavior that these women experienced come from men, or was it a mix?
I would say that it was mostly men because they were mostly in male-dominated environments. Although one of the things that we, at the last minute, threw in a text box where women could describe their experiences, and we had thousands of responses. And the most of those responses were about male managers. But again, you know, it's hard to point the finger at one particular sex or gender because that was where most of the managers were. You know, the bottom line for us, as we say, it's you know, the narrative around what do we need to do to get women to do this better, we want to push against that narrative. It's not about fixing the women. It really is about fixing the environment.
You know, it's so ironic because you can't watch a Sunday morning talk show without seeing ads by some of the great big behemoth companies, the big manufacturers, of celebrating the fact that they've got women in the workplace, that it's a progressive environment, that, you know, we're promoting careers for women in particular. And it sounds like a bunch of PR that does not align neatly with the actual environment that you find in some of those companies. Is that fair to say?
That's fair to say. Now, I think there's some, you know, there are some things or some organizations are doing, and there are things that there are well-meaning people trying to do, make some changes, but it's not a simple, you know, it's really understanding that men and women look at this, because we now have the data from the men and women look at this climate very differently. And what may be interpreted as a friendly gesture by one person is being interpreted as not respectful by somebody else.
You know, what's so ironic about this, you worked with, 31 universities that have made huge investments in creating an infrastructure at the academic institutions to produce these great women engineers. So it's obviously in their interest to see that they are successful and successful alum. So what happens from the time they walk across the stage with that degree to the point where they become disillusioned in 5 or 10 years? Is it that there's no training inside the companies themselves? Because you would think that the managers are also in that same academic environment that is supporting women in the profession.
Couple of things. One is a lot of the academic colleges and universities and programs where these women have gone to engineering schools, they're already one of the minorities. They are already dealing with an environment where they are, their voices may not be heard at the same level as their male colleagues and male counterparts. They may be in teams where they may not be able to, their contributions may not be seen equally. Now, we did not study the academic environment at all. It did come up in some of the responses that women gave us in those open text box responses that Nadia talked about, but we did not explicitly ask about. A lot of the women said that their academic careers did not prepare them for the world of work, whether it is through internships, whether it's through co-op opportunities, through other kind of experiences. They were not prepared for the world of work. A lot of them were not, especially the world of work where the technical requirements and the kind of things that were being asked to do of engineering grads in terms of the engineering was portrayed in colleges, in the college curriculum as being something exciting where you change the world, we do things that impact people's lives and you have a contribution to make. And when they saw the real world where they were just one piece of the bigger puzzle and their contribution was not either was devalued or they were not getting clear instructions or there were a myriad of factors that prevented them to translate what they had learned in the academic world in the real world. It was not challenging. It was not that satisfying. Their impact was being diminished. So there was that kind of a leap to be made from the academic environment to the world of work. At the same time, the world of work was also throwing at them things that were not something that they experienced at the school level in terms of if they experienced a little bit of, let's say, undermining or lack of support, it was magnified much more. Now, again, this is with a caveat that we did not compare the academic environment with the work environment, but just looking at the narratives from some of these women, it seems that what they were experiencing at work, whether it is especially the negative aspects, were much more magnified and amplified than they had experienced in the college environment. And they got to the stage where they had the technical skills, and then it was, am I going to continue in this field, swimming against the current, trying to prove over and over and over again every single day, or do I quit and find other opportunities where I can use my skill? So even if they leave engineering, they still believed that this was a good path for them. They're using their skills in engineering, and it's just that they are using a different field to kind of bring it to fruition.
But how sad that they would have to abandon a profession that they believed in.
Yeah, and the other piece of it is think about what we lose because we don't have a diverse team, and this is sort of where our research is going now, and I don't know if you want to get to that right now, but if you don't have a diverse team, you don't have as much innovation and creativity. So what loss do we have as a society because we've lost that set of eyes or that perspective in the engineering field.
Is engineering unique in respect to how it has created these barriers, rebuffing women from rising and succeeding, or is this, you know, a reflection of society's problems?
Well, I think I would argue to add to what Romulus said, where are the managers? How are they being reinforced? What are they being evaluated on? And my bet is they're not, if they're going to be evaluated on keeping women or keeping a diverse workforce, they might do things a little bit differently. So is engineering unique? I think those technical fields might be unique in terms of doing that. I think we see it in chemistry. Let's just say male-dominated
computing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right. And yet in other areas that use the STEM fields,
right.
Medicine, for example.
Exactly. Medicine is almost 50-50 now, although you do see men and women going into different specializations. But yeah, medicine is 50-50. Biomedical engineering is 50-50, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah. Very close to that.
Industrial engineering is more gender balanced. So it's types of engineering.
Yeah. You're listening to UWM Today here on WUWM. Good to have you with us this week. I'm Tom Lujack, and joining us in the studio are two professors at UW-Milwaukee who've are in the midst of, I think we're still saying, in the midst yes. of an ongoing national study, trying to figure out why so many women who are trained as engineers and can be successful as engineers end up leaving that profession, frustrated and feeling that they have, as Nadia or as Ramila just said, feel like they're swimming upstream in a male-dominated environment. Our guests are Nadia Fouad and Ramila Singh, both now in what, 7, 8 years of studying this?
Almost 10 years.
Looking at yes. At the future mm-hmm. of women in the STEM fields. Let's talk about what you've done over the last few years interviewing men, because the focus of the research is why are women leaving the profession, but you didn't just talk to women.
We didn't, and it was funny because at the very beginning, the first question we got, you know, this research really generated lots of public interest, and we had many, many, many interviews with popular press. And the first question we got was, well, what about the men? Are there men leaving for the same reasons, and do they have the same kinds of concerns? Initially, I said, well, we really were not, and I didn't mean it really in a pejorative way. We weren't interested in differences between men and women. I sort of said, I don't
women
care about
men
the men.
Men seem to be doing pretty good right
yeah,
now.
Yeah, exactly.
Right?
Although it's a legitimate question. And if you start to see the same kinds of environmental concerns for men and women, then I think it's a more compelling story to go to the leaders in these companies and businesses and say, you know, this is not good for anybody. It's not a good environment for anybody. So, yeah, we went back to the universities and surveyed their male alums and had another 7,500 mm-hmm. Participants. These sample sizes
wow,
are huge.
Huge.
And the other study we did what we call flip the question. We partnered with engineering professional societies, to find out why men and women were engaged in engineering. Because one of the findings we had from the very beginning study that surprised us were the number of women who said, not only am I going to leave my organization, I'm leaving the engineering profession altogether. So because it's one thing to say it might be a very good decision to leave and go from one company that might not be that supportive to another company, but to leave the engineering profession altogether was pretty
drastic step.
Yeah, really pretty drastic step. So the professional societies, we were invited to speak at the National Academy of Engineering, and many of the professional societies were interested in our findings and wanted to support what we were doing. So we've got a lot of help from them to reach out and recruit working engineers to find out what was it that helped them be engaged.
So what do the men say? Do they also have issues with the profession?
They do. I think the part that Nadia mentioned in terms of having this connection between the desire to leave the organization because it's not fulfilling your needs, it's not supportive, it does not allow you the advancement opportunities that you're looking for. And to take that step, to leave the profession altogether, I think this is something that was a huge revelation for us. And we used that to look at further research. Men are leaving the engineering profession. So we did two studies. One is compare exactly on the same questions that we asked women the first time around, go back to the same university so that we had comparable universities and majors. And we found that compared to women who had left at 38% the profession, we had 41% men leaving the profession. So with a sample size of about 7,000 plus, you had 41% men leave engineering in the time that we surveyed 2012, I believe, 2011. Oh, no, 2015.
14, 15. Yeah, right.
And women were not leaving at a lesser rate. It's just that it was a smaller sample size, but proportionally they were still a little less
right.
at 38% over.
Did the men have the same reasons the women
Very
had?
Much similar. So men left for reasons of there were no advancement opportunities, they lost interest, and low salary expectations and didn't like the boss. Women, on the other hand, also had the same set of reasons, no advancement, lost interest.
Didn't like the culture.
Didn't like the culture. And one thing that was different for men and women was women wanted to spend more time with family. Now, we wanted to kind of frame it in the context that it's not that that was the first option. They tried to look for alternative arrangements at work that would give them some flexibility to manage their caregiving responsibilities. And not finding that climate, not finding that support, not finding those policies or being penalized for using them, they took the option of quitting or leaving the engineering workforce. So it was after trying to make it work that they left, but more time with family was one of the reasons that was starkly different from men and women who left engineering.
Wait, was it perceived to be a more hostile environment to women than to men? Did men see it as the profession in the same negative light as females?
Broadly speaking,
I would say, yeah, broadly speaking. And these are huge sample sizes. So, you know, we do see some significant differences between men and women, but at a practical effect, we see many similarities in terms of how they see the environment. I just think that women are seeing it that much more negatively. They are more upset about lack of opportunities for advancement or clear promotion paths. We've done some
criteria
for promotion. Companies that depend on somebody tapping you on the shoulder to be ready for promotion, that, oh, you're ready for promotion, those are the ones that women are not seeing a clear path for promotion.
This seems like an indictment on management at engineering firms.
Exactly. Now, interestingly, I had an interview with a reporter for, let's just say, a large national newspaper, where I made this comment, and he said that is not compelling. That is not a compelling issue for management in technical companies. Now, I think if they had to report the loss of dollars in training and then losing individuals, maybe both men and women who are leaving for climate reasons, wouldn't there start to be some investment? It's easier to retain. As we know at UWM, it's easier to retain people that have been trained and socialized into the company. As opposed to trying to recruit new people and get them socialized?
Well, and anybody in HR, no matter what the field, will tell you that one of their greatest expenses is hiring and then retaining employees. It's incredibly expensive to have to replace someone that you've made a big investment in.
Right.
So it doesn't sound like a good business decision to allow a business environment to unwind in a way that drives people away.
Absolutely.
Well, and talk about, our immigration policies have actually affected this too, because there isn't this global workforce that can come in and take these positions.
Which makes retention and engagement of your workforce so much more critical, especially when you have talent that is just walking out the door. So it's not just the loss of dollars, but it's also the loss of knowledge, the continuity. You have a lot of relationships that have been built around certain things that are being just disrupted. So the costs are in terms of disruption too. And there are a lot of small fixes and also large fixes that can be implemented to retain and engage the folks who are remaining, both men and women. I think what this data has really helped us see is that, we thought for the longest time there's this narrative that women want different things from the work environment, especially in technical fields. And our data says no. Both men and women want the same thing. They want a respectful culture. They want advancement opportunities. They want to use the technical skills for which they worked really hard. So it is not something that is like rocket science in a way, but it requires a shift in mindset and an attitude, which probably is the hardest thing in terms of treating people equally, giving them fair opportunities, giving them a fair shake, and not looking at what they call a gendered lens, so to say, that women are going to be different, looking at people's capabilities and skills rather than just viewing them as, oh, she's a female or he's a male, so we are going to target things differently for them. We like to dissolve it into convenient sound bites that, women want different things than men do. No, they both want the same thing, advancement, a place to work that their contributions are respected and valued.
And to be psychologically safe at work.
Mm-hmm. To be who they are.
Yeah.
Have you found an opportunity to get these findings in front of the CEOs and the presidents of the companies that hire engineers?
We did.
We have, yeah.
With the Society for Women Engineers invited us twice for their plenary speeches with their their board of CEOs and top HR
partners.
Folks, their HR
right.
partners and directors.
And are they receptive? To?
They're very receptive.
They're very
they get
receptive.
It.
Yeah. The Grace Hopper, I spoke at the Grace Hopper conference mm-hmm. and spoke to the tech executives. And I also spoke to the HR executives. And we've also had some opportunities to go and talk. You spent a time with a local company. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we have. They're receptive. And that's absolutely critical because that leadership needs to start at the top, but there needs to be some accountability.
And I think what has been really helpful to the CEOs and the HR directors, the feedback that has come to us is that we have the numbers to back up our initiatives because they had these narratives, they had the anecdotes. Now we have provided them with data. It may not be specific to their companies, but they have a national sample size or nationally drawn sample size, which shows that these are not fluke figures. This is not just 5 or 10 or 15 women. These are thousands of women, thousands of men who have comparable experiences. And it is on them to change the conversation and change the climate.
It sounds like you could take some of those managers back into the university for some training right. and education to try to put an end to the hostile environments that drive, as you point out, both women and men out. So where does your research go from here?
So we have a new grant proposal into the National Science Foundation with a colleague of ours in the Lubar School of Business,
Ed Levitas,
whose research is in innovation. And we are hoping to get some money to study this, go back to the same group of men and women and ask if they are interested in partnering with us on their teams. And studying their teams and looking to see how diversity within teams, because the narrative, again, that we keep saying is that if you have a diverse team, you will have more innovation. Then the narrative is that true? Well, that's what we want to study.
And that might be a clue to figuring out how to create a better environment.
Absolutely. Exactly. Team dynamics are different. They may be a microcosm of the organizational practices, so that would be very interesting for us to study. Again, not much research on real-life teams.
Right. A lot of it has been done with students.
Yeah. Well, we will have you back because this problem is still with us, even after the years since we first began talking about this. But
yeah.
thank you very much for sharing the information that you have been able to gather, and best of luck as you continue to try to chart a course to a better future for those women and men engineers in our country.
Thank you for giving us the opportunity to share our findings and our research with you and the listeners. It's a real pleasure. Thank you.
Pleasure to be here. Thank you.
And our pleasure, too. Nadia Fouad, UWM's Distinguished Professor and the Marion Ted Kellner Endowed Chair of Educational Psych at UWM School of Education, and Romila Singh, Associate Professor of Organizations and Strategic Management at the Lubar School of Business at UWM, both our guests on this edition of UWM Today. Well, that's all for this week. Thanks so much for taking some time to hear about the amazing world of research and work being done at the Academy. We'll see you next week at the same time. I'm Tom Lujack.
You've been listening to UWM Today with host Tom Lujack, the weekly program where you get to meet the people behind one of America's top research universities, University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee. Playing a vital role in shaping the future of Milwaukee and Wisconsin, UWM's diversity, academic excellence, and world-class research contribute to the region's economic development and quality of life. Learn more at uwm.edu.